it's hard to be maspid somebody when a Messiah that most of the Olam never saw, knew, maybe not even heard of him, some, and to just to try to give over in a half hour some sense of who he was, what he was, it's really sort of asking for the impossible. We were Zaycha. The Ashkocha had it that he was here in the Beis Medrash 11 years ago. This Yonos remembers as a young boy. We was some sort of Hashkocha that he came here and he spoke. So we have some Shaychas, some Kesha to it. And the fact that in Chazal they call a Doyer on the name of a Gadol of the Dor. It's his Dor. This Doyer Shal Moshe Rabbeinu is a Doyer Shal Yeshua. So we're included in his Dor. He was a person who was the Manik of the Dor, and therefore we have some Shaychas to it, whether or not we had a personal Kesher with him. And it's something to try and just sketch out a little bit of a picture of a demus that really is beyond anything that we have a sense of. Briefly, he was born about 104 years ago. He grew up Kamitz in Brisk. Kamitz is not far from Brisk. And he learned in local yeshiva. There was a yeshiva in Brisk, Rav Moshe Lokolovsky, the Rav Moshe, he had a yeshiva there. That's where he did much of his learning. He lived next to the Brisk Rav, and he was very friendly with the Brisk Rav's children. To escape the war, before the war, to escape the draft, he was in Switzerland. He managed to get into yeshiva in Switzerland together with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the Gadol HaDor in Europe after the war until he was nifted about 20-some-odd years ago. They were very, very close chaverim, chavruses, and till 1945, came to Israel, settled in Bnei Brak, was a Rebbe, Rashiva of the Panovich Yeshiva Ketana, and pretty much that's where he was the rest of his life. He was quite unknown for many decades, except for the people who knew and understood Godless, and until Rav Shach forced him to start becoming more public figure and becoming available to the public. That, in sum total, is the chitzonius of his life. His hasmada was incredible. The stories of when he was in Switzerland, there was a tkuf, he was in forced labor, and his hasmada, the stories about his hasmada were incredible. His precious, his not taking anything from this world. He lived on so little and so meager. There was a tekufa when he didn't get paid for a half year the yeshiva was teaching at. Couldn't pay him. And he lived basically, he managed to get chatzilim, eggplants, old discarded eggplants. That's pretty much what they lived on. He had fruit here, fruit there. He was an extraordinarily ascetic person. His apartment, my wife grew up near there, and she was friends with the younger daughter, and we went into Rav Shteyman a few years ago. We had some pressing issue we wanted to discuss, and my wife said everything in the apartment is exactly what it was 40, 50 years ago. There no change. The simplicity and his ascetism were incredible. His calm, his sensitivity, and the way in which he dealt with people was also remarkable. But what astounded most people, and especially in his last decades of his life, was he grew up extraordinarily, like we said, his life was very withdrawn from the world. He didn't even know what a credit card was. And yet, his advice was incredible. And people would come to him, and he would cut through a lot of issues and get to the heart of something. Remember the issue we discussed, within a few seconds, he pinpointed something that was extraordinary. He and his leadership of the tzibur, he was a quiet person, never asserted himself in a forceful way, and yet he had a profound influence. People were influenced by him. When he came here, he was 93. He had made a few trips. He decided it's important to keep the kesher between Chutz Haaretz and Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he believed in that a lot, and he schlepped out. He went, he was here a week to 2 weeks in America, he went to Brazil, he went to Canada, and not an easy journey for anybody, the schedule he had, and he did it because he felt that it was extremely important to keep the kesher with people in Chutz Haaretz, to mechazik them, to strengthen yeshivas, and so on. I'd like to focus, so if there's a takeaway for us in the person, it's the smada, it's the simple Yerushalayim, but I would like to sort of focus on a certain nekuda that I think it'll help in understanding what a big person is and why the hanhag of a tzibur, why the leadership is given to big people. So Gemara and Saita. The Gemara says it's a Saita of Memtes, and the Gemara speaks about the Chorban and what we're missing since the Chorban. So Tanya, Shem Belozo Oimet, Tahara Botla, Tam Vireach. The because there was no Tahara, so Tam Vireach, taste and pleasant odor also became bottled. In other words, because there was less tahara in the area of you know, keeping chulim b'tahara and so on, therefore tam and reyach also became bottled. Fruits no longer had the special reyach and so on. The pashta pshat of this is that the it's an onesh, it's sort of a punishment that things are not as good as they used to be, like in line with everything else. Danny Moore brings a story. Rav Huna Ashkach Tumrita de Chaninisa. Rav Huna found a date that had extraordinary odor to it. It was a very special kind of date. Something special about that type of date. Rashi says Shmeina was a very, very plump date, and it had Reach Toiv. Shokla Korcha Bisudre. He wrapped it up in a handkerchief so that you could not see what it is. And my assumption from the Hemshel Gemara is you could also not easily smell what it is. Also Rabbi Brei, Rabbi his son came in. Amalei, he said, Morchina Reicha de Chinenusa. I smell the smell of this tamar. There's a tamar somewhere here. Amalei, so he told him, Bni, Tahara Yeshbach. You have Tahara to you. You're an Adam Tahar. Yovan Alei, and he gave it to you. So, learning, understanding this Gemara, all of a sudden, it's not the pshat that because of the Churban, the Peiros lost their odor. We lost the ability to detect the odor. It's something in people that has changed in a way that we no longer detect the odor. It's a downgrading of people, not of products. What is that about? I mean, it's very nice that fruits have a good odor and they smell good, but one could think of greater klolos than that particular thing. It's like a little cherry on the top. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, it says about Moshiach, V'nochel av Ruach Hashem, Ruach Chochmo Bina, Ruach Eitz Gvura, Ruach Dasyas Hashem. It says about Melech HaMashiach that he's going to have a Ruach of Chochma and Bina and Eitz and Gvura. Uksiv v'hi richo b'yiras Hashem. It says he'll be able to flush out a din Torah. People will come and argue. He'll be able to smell, so to speak, b'yiras Hashem. Rava Amma, so it's a machlokes what that pasuk means. Rava Amma d'moirich v'do'in. He will be able to sort of intuitively, the word smell, smell a rat, so to speak, like when we use it colloquially. He'll be able to smell something and pass it. V'shafat b'tzedek dalem v'chif mishal v'oretz. And the Gemara says, Bar Kusiva, Bar Kochva, who was possibly a candidate for being Mashiach, and people believed that he definitely has the qualities for Mashiach. So the Rabbanah tested him, and they said, let's see if you have that ability of Mayrach V'doy, that you can detect with the smell what's right and what's wrong. He didn't have it, and they knew that he was not Mashiach or Mashiach Sheker. That's the Gemara over here. So the Gemara is telling us that the ability to be able to detect something, the ability to be able to have this sixth sense that's called Reach, is a product of Yiras Hashem. It's a product of Yiras Hashem. The Pasuk tells us, Yiras Hashem tehoira emedes la'ad. And let's try a little bit to understand about the mile of Yiras Hashem and what Yiras Hashem is. When a person has ahava, you can have two or three things concurrently that you like. So you like A and B and C and D, whether it's people, whether it's products, whether it's anything. They're not austere at each other. Yes, if I have to choose, I'll choose A over B over C, but they don't really, they're not really austere at each other. Yira, fear of something, is austere. If a person is talking to an important government official, he's in awe. In walks the person's boss, his focus changes totally. And now he's the person I'm deferring, and this person is out of the picture. Yira does not allow easily for different yiras to work concurrently. Ava, it's not a stira. Yira is something where I'm focused on something and this is what I'm doing and so on. So the either of yira, Avas Hashem, doesn't demand tahara. It doesn't demand that the person do it exclusively for Avas Hashem. The more the better. Yira, for it to be genuine, it has to be this, and this is the only reason for it. So a person who's in this world of Yiras Hashem is Tahar. And of all the senses we have, the one that's most easily damaged, the one that's the most that gets off is the sense of smell. A person can have good eyesight, worse eyesight, and so on. We don't have a situation where eyes or ears get knocked out suddenly. A person gets a cold, a person has a stuffed nose, instantly there's no smell. We don't have that type of phenomena with sight or hearing. Rahman al-San, a person can lose it. But the idea that something, a person, if you mix in some other odor, you already are very confused because it's a very sensitive thing, and either you can or you can't. It's something that demands 100% or doesn't exist or just about. So of the middos of a person that reflect something that's tohar, it's yira and only yira. The what is specifically tahara focused on a person? I mean, refraining from averis, that's true, and that's but tahara has a very, very specific address. The Mesillas Yesharim speaks about the midah of tahara. Tahara is one of the midas on the ladder of going up to Ruach HaKodesh. So the first three, the Zahiris, Rizas, and Nikias, deal with the maisim of a person. That a person does maisim that are good, and each one as he defines. The midas of precious is where a person draws back from being nene, from things that are mutter but borderline. Okay, tahara is next. What's tahara? So the Mesillas Yesharim says tahara is what are your kavanis in what you're doing. A person does something for good reasons. But there's also reasons in it. So a person is sitting and learning because he wants to learn. It's the right thing to do. He also wants covet out of it. A little bit, not a lot. That's a pagam in Tahara. Tahara is not in the Maisa. That's Nikias. Doing something where the Maisa is perfect, that's dealt with Nikias. Tahara means that the person, his Avodas Hashem, is totally for the right reason, and only for the right reason, and nothing else involved. It's not enough. If a person does the right thing and he has some other kavanas, it's not an avera. It doesn't make it not a mitzvah. But the madrega that's called tahara, which is a direct result of yira, which is aligned with yira, that's something that is a that's something that has shaykhus to the person's kavana, what he's doing, why he's doing it, so on. And let's understand why. Because let's take a mashal. When a person is going to a store to buy something he wants to buy, and it's something very, 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 he really, really wants it, and he finds another tchotchke there, so he's not going to buy it. I mean, he has the money, so I'm going now to buy a car, the new car that I bought. There's also another tchotchke, because I'll buy that also. But imagine a person is going to have, lo aleinu, very difficult surgery, and he sees a tchotchke on the way to the hospital. Does he bother to pick up? No, I'm having surgery, but also pick up a tchotchke. His mind is not in it. He's got one thing on his mind, and that is what's awaiting him. A person has a very difficult trial, very difficult issue with the law. His mind has no room for anything else. Yiras Hashem means that if I'm in the presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Maloich al Aretz Kvoidoi, then what does it mean that somebody will say something nice about me? Then I don't have that. Then I have other wonderful midas. But I don't have Yira. Yira is exclusive, because that's what it is. So the midah of Tahara is a midah that's closely aligned with Yira. Yira is Hashem Tahira. And therefore, the person who has Yira is Tahara, and he has that Chush HaReach. The minute it's a little bit off, it's not Yira, it's not Tahar, and the person doesn't have the Chush HaReach. I was zocher to see him twice, person to be there, was zocher to have him in yeshiva. Her, you know, somebody that some parts of my family very close to him, and so on. If I can look at a midah that strikes, his midah of tahara was incredible. He wouldn't take anything. There was no hanah in this world that he took of. I remember going to the house, so he was in his 90s. He was sitting on a stool without a back. That's what he sat on all his life, until he was hospitalized. But he sat on a stool without a back. Everything was, in terms of money, he was to the umpteenth degree very, very wary of taking a penny more than he needs, because it's not tahor. Taking something that maybe has no shaykhus to, even helping people that were close to him. One of his gaboyim, who came with him here, was very close with him, was Nifta, the fairly young person. They needed to create a fund for him. He didn't want to personally do it. He felt he'd be using other things that he's involved in to sort of help him, and he wouldn't do it. With his own children, to network, to ask for favors, to the umpteenth degree, he would pull away from it, because it's not tar. There was a tara to him. When you were in his presence, you felt there's nothing but. All it is a person in the presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's a video that made the rounds a lot of times. Somebody came from a school, somebody who actually has a network of schools at Yisrael. And he was trying to get approval or asking him a shayla. There were parents that wanted to set certain criteria that would exclude some children from the schools. And the reason was because they were sort of drawing down the schools and things of that nature. And, you know, when the person presents the problem, he answers back and he says, it's a guy, that's all it is. The only thing that bothers them is because they need to feel more elite. And he was adamant about it. It was one of the things that bothered him. And I don't think the parents didn't want good for their children. I don't think they didn't mean well. But there was also, he had a sense that it's less than noble. It's not 100% that way. And for somebody who has those fine senses of what's good and what's right, that's something that he was able to determine immediately. And when people would come to him, I know from different people who told me when they came to him, the thing that would strike people was how immediately he melted through layers of personality and was able to get to the point as far as the person was concerned. What does the person mean? What does the person want? What's driving him? And a lot of times that's a lot more important. The problem as presented is the tip of the iceberg. Usually what's not presented is what the person is. And his verichoy, his ability to detect it, was because his own nefesh was tahor. His own nefesh didn't have any of these things, and therefore he was extremely, extremely, he had that ability to the hair. One of the things his tara from physical things. He was an ascetic. I mean, the people took him, he basically would eat some bread and drink some milk a day. That was basically his meal. He wouldn't sit back. He had a stool. He very, very, took nothing of this world to corrupt his tahara. Covet and things like that to him were also anathema. And he was very, very sharply. It was something that he tried to push away. When he went to Chutz La'aretz and he went around these places, the physical toll of going around and schlepping, I don't know how many cities he must have gone in 2 weeks, wasn't what he was bothered by. He was bothered by a lot more by the covet. He muttered as he walked in here, they were singing Susharim, and he muttered to himself, another piece of chaza, another piece of chaza. That was what he muttered to himself. He left over a tzava, a will, and I'd like to read it. It's incredible what a person... I ask not to say any haspedim for me, not in front of me, not in front of me. Not to make a so-called atzeres esiris or atzeres evil or all sorts of euphemisms that they invent for hesped. This is his sense of humor. I know it has different names. It's chizuv, it's kiruv, it's this, it's that. I don't want it. Base, why we're doing it? Loy lichtoy shemayim alai, not to write on me, not bitonim yoimim, not in daily newspapers, not weekly newspapers, not monthly newspapers. He knows there'll be when say newspapers or someone will be medayek, it's the weekly section, not the monthly section. He was very, he had it. Not to print any notices about the Leviah, not to go around telling people, enough if you have 10 people, it's good enough for me. Not to wait, and he said orally more than 6 hours, his kavura was within 6 hours of his patira, which meant, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, and you got a few hundred thousand people to have to come down in that time, but he was mitzavet and was within the day he was after the kavura. They actually had only one hesped, or Gersh Edelson, who didn't, he just said a few words. 5, my place in the cemetery is between simple people. Not to write on my mitzvah any titles except Reb Aaron Yudel Leib ben Reb Noach Tzvi Steinman. The matzeva should be as cheap and simple as possible. Don't waste money for buying me a fancy place in Beis HaKvaris. If you want to give tzedakah, and don't buy me a place. In other words, don't say, well, I'm buying a fancy place, I'll also give tzedakah. Take the money, give it to tzedakah. Don't buy me a fancy place, that doesn't interest me. When on the days that people, the minigas to go to the cave, like at the end of the shiva, the shleishim, the yard site, don't spend a lot of time doing it. Much better than that, I would like that for the 24-hour period, they should take turns learning without a hefsik. It's better to make, like, have groups, taking turns, lilmoid keseda, to sit and to learn all the time, and not speak verbatim. If you want to do something that's a lot more important to me than coming to the cave and the shiva shleishim. 9, if by looking for a place to daven for the omid, Yisrael, people are baruch Hashem, there's a lot of minyanim, people are very makir daven for the omid, dafka for somebody who's nifta, said if you're going to have to look a lot, so there'll be a bit of Torah, better learn l'shem shemayim. I'd rather you take that time and learn l'shem shemayim instead of looking for a place to daven. Anyone who wants to do something for me, I ask him to learn a perek mishnayis told the Yud Beis Chodesh, and girls should say 10 perekei Tehillim, Shabbos Yom Tov included. I ask not to use the title Tzadik or Shemayim on me, because I don't want to be embarrassed in the world that's emes. I ask mechila from anyone who I might have hurt his feelings, and anyone that I might owe money, and he knows that there's no way he can collect it halachically. In other words, doesn't have any proof or whatever it is. I ask him to be moichel me. In other words, if you can collect it halachically, do that. But if somebody somehow I lent money to somebody doesn't have any proof, so you can't take it from Yisom and so on, I ask him to be moichel me. And 13, finally, that's the last one. Because a lot of people make a mistake about me, I advise people not to name children after me. But I'm not answering it. That was the tzavo of somebody who was ish tohar, somebody who was kuloi emes, kuloi yira, kuloi lived with a sense. Now, I want to add something to this. He didn't think that he was a chashva person. He didn't think he was a masmid. He didn't think he was a tzaddik. That's fake. Because we think of tzaddik, masmid, Talmud Chacham, looking around, here, there, and we sort of make a chesed. We live in a world of sheker. I mean, it's like when you go to a hospital that's doing rehab for people who's learning to walk, and walking down the hallway in a half hour is called a major physical accomplishment, and you set that as a standard. That's not the standard. That's for people who are low aleinu limping or whatever it is. So walking down the hallway in a half hour is a major accomplishment. But there's a different world. There's a world of emes. And that world, the standards are very different. Yiras Hashem means, when Shivis Hashem Nevi Summit, doesn't mean Hashem is looking, no, I shouldn't do it because he's going to catch me. It means I live with something else. I had a chavrus, I was mentioned, I once asked him, why don't you become a shishiva? Something, he was off a lot of jobs. He was on a chashav yaisa. He eventually became a dayan and a shkoil and everything. He said, as long as the Chaim Shmuel is alive, I can't see the title of shishiva fit me. That was what he described. Rebbe lived with a different world, Rebbe Leib. He lived with a world of emes. And because he was withdrawn from this world, and he didn't read the newspapers, and he didn't here, and he didn't live with the Narishkeit, he had a different set of standards. And we had somebody in our generation that had Tara, that had this Midah. It was Tara, it was Yerushalayim. They come together. The person who is a Yorei excludes everything out. If a person lives with a Kaddish Baruch in front of him, so everything else loses its chashivas. Like we said before, if I like learning, I can also like a shmanza. But if I'm standing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shmanzas don't exist. That's the difference. He. For those of us who are zeichet to see, those of to hear, and for those of that was zeichet to live in his door, it's something misbonik. On a practical level, the hardest mitzvah to his learning, studying, learning basmada, and it certainly was his primary activity. And especially his young years, his asmada was incredible. Even his old years, but in the old years there was a lot of things that he gave a lot of time for people. But as a bacher, he would learn 20 hours a day. It was an incredible amount of time. Behatznea, didn't make any waves, didn't, you know, everything was simple and pashut. He and Rabbi Soloveitchik were like brothers, B'lei Reuven Nefesh, and they sat there learning Yom V'Laila. But there was a sense of living in the presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu, a sense of Yira. The Klal Yisrael looks for people, for manhigim, that have that chush. If they have the Yiras Hashem, that tahira means there isn't anything else that's meaningful in that world. The world of Yirei Hashem, there nothing else exists that has a value. And you understand, if you have it yourself, you feel it in people. You understand the people where there is, what's driving the person? What's the mishmash of motivations and drives and so on? A person who's a Yireilikim senses it. The hanhag of Klal Yisrael is given over to people that are meirich v'doyim, that they have the chushereach, and they run the door based on that. Bez Hashem, some of you are young, you'll be older, you'll be zocher to see things, you'll be zocher to understand, you'll be zocher to misbein on these things, and at least understand that there was a paradigm of a person that had nothing but Yiras Elokim, that had Kedusha and Tahara, and was able, because of the Kedusha and the Tahara, because of the Tahara of the person, and Yiras Shamayim, he was able to, kefir keinu, we had a sense of what it means to be merich v'dorn, to be able to use that intuition for emes, and to run a darpi emes. I took the liberty to speak, even though it was not to speak. I felt was so far removed from it that if we're not going to explain, we're not going to see, we'll have lost any chakras to that. David should give us it's that we shouldn't lose totally that spark of Yira, that spark of Tyre, that spark of Emes, that he was, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give it, should preserve that chelik, that we should still have some musig of what it means to be Yirei Elokim, an Ish Emes, an Ish Tohar, a Meirach V'Doyim.